Yeah, I played it safe there. That's the Police and I Can't Stand Losing You. And two former members of the Police, not Stuart Copeland and Sting, but Andrew Brasher. Not yes, Brasher. I've been indeed. Saying it wrong all morning. Apologies.
That's
Andrew.
Okay.
Andrew Brasher and George Smith are in front of me. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Lee.
So where were you, Police, and at what level did you operate as Police? Were you constables? Were you detectives, Andrew?
I joined with George back in 1972 into the Hertfordshire Police Cadets and then eventually joined Hertfordshire Regulars in 1974 as a policeman. I then transferred after I first got married to Suffolk, where I remained in uniform doing both PSU training, which is public support unit, did traffic at the latter stages, and then unfortunately retired on medical grounds after 20 years. So I remained in uniform throughout, basically.
And what about you, George?
I was a constable at Welwyn Garden City. I was there for a few years. I then went to Hertford. I then got promoted to sergeant. I was a uniform sergeant at Hitchin, North Harts, for a few years. And then I had become a detective constable before I got promoted. And then I ended my service as a detective sergeant on the cheque and credit card unit, which was part of the fraud squad at police headquarters.
And they say once a police officer, always a police officer. Do you agree with that?
I think so. Yeah, I do say that. You keep your eyes peeled for certain things. You do notice things perhaps more than the general public. Things that stand out, things that are suspicious, little things like that.
Well, it's good to have you here. It feels very safe, at least
Thank
for the
you.
Next 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Better. But we're here to talk about this novel that you've written, Harder Yet, it's called, published by Vanguard, which is an imprint of Pegasus. It's a novel about two 17-year-olds who join the police force. So is this really a novel or is this a memoir?
This is a novel. We've decided to do it as a novel. Based on certain characters, we didn't want to give too much away. We didn't want to offend anybody. We didn't want to be sued
or get
any libelous action taken against us. I don't think there's anything in there. I mean, 97-98% of what's in the book is actually true stories.
And is this from your memory?
Mostly. I mean, George approached me 3 years ago with the idea and I agreed that I'd help him out, and as George went away, I sort of rummaged through some old memorabilia, and I happened to come up with two diaries for the 2 years we were going to write the book. If that's not fate, I don't know what is. But so that gave us the factual information that was required, the days we did either false hockey matches, football matches, when we went to Wales on outward bound courses, etc., etc. So, yeah, I mean, that was exceptionally good, and it was so fortunate that I had them. And I kept all the old sports memorabilia as well, so I knew how far I jumped, how fast I'd run, etc., and what days they were, where we went. So it was nice that we had some information like that as against our own recollections as well.
And how would you describe the novel? I mean, people might think because it's a novel about two police officers that it's going to be a dark and seedy crime novel. But the picture on the front and the title, Harder Yet! Implies to me that this is a comic novel.
Yes, I would agree with that. Some people have already said it's a bit like it's a combination of Police Academy, Fawlty Towers, and maybe the Carry On films. it's a bit like that. If you were to mix it up, have a mix up of those three things, you wouldn't be far wrong.
Carry On, Police Academy, Basel.
So it's that's what it's based on. But it is based upon that those 3 years. It concentrates on those 3 years, our upbringing, our background, our schooling, where we came from. That's the introductory bit. The bit in the middle is when we joined the cadets. I mean, for me personally, it was all about the going through that process of trying to get that first job. It's so difficult in today trying to get that job, applying for all those roles. And I got knocked back so many times. I mean, that's all in the book, but
So this is about two teenagers, Ed and Harry, who joined the Tinkers Hill Force as police cadets. Now, I don't want you to give anything away, obviously, but a few of the things that happened to them. What happens to them?
As you asked me my surname, that played a few roles within the police force. Being told by my father, my name is Brasher, and if people don't pronounce it right, you don't answer them. Well, that's not exactly the attitude to take in the police force when you have senior officers calling you out and you just sit there and ignore them. You have to correct them, but with respect. Another incident in there where one had to remain dogmatic was we had high security alert one night during the early 70s when the terrorists, the deputy chief constable happened to come up in his car, and we were told, without warrant cards, you can't come into force headquarters. He didn't have his warrant card. And I stood my ground and refused entry and then got hauled in front of the chief superintendent at training the following day. And I'm thinking, oh no, that's the end of my career. Pat on the back, but it was a no-win situation. If I'd let him in, I would have been ostracised. I got a polite ostracisation the following day, but that's how it was. That's how they treated you, and you had to do what you were told.
And certainly in the police force, and I'm guessing among cadets, it's I'm imagining, although correct me if you're wrong, it's almost like an army mentality that you were in this together.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, we had drill, and certainly on the first few weeks, maybe the first few months, we were having drill probably all morning on the parade square, and you had your bullier boots, and if they didn't think it was good enough, they threw you out again and said, right, do your boots again. You had your iron, your trousers with knife line edges, and that's how it was. It was bringing pride into what you wore as a police officer. They made you fit. You had to, went through a physical regime. Again, that's related to the book, just how hard it was, but that's what they expected of you. You were there to do a job and you had to be physically fit enough to do that role.
And between you, you've got sort of, you were in the force for some 30 years, I think you said.
I was 20 before I came out.
Yeah. And I did 30.
Did you see the nature of policing change during that time?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
In what ways?
Well, the introduction of the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, for one. I mean, when we first joined in 1974, they called it judges' rules, and it was a set of rules used by the police as guidance, and which we had to. But then, obviously, I think it was 1984,
yeah,
86,
pace like that, came in
when the Police and Criminal Evidence came in, and you're talking about obviously Section 1, stop and search, things like that.
Which what difference did that make to you on a daily level?
It was a huge. Huge difference. Things were dramatically changed. I was a custody officer. Well, didn't have custody officers. You had a station sergeant that when someone was arrested, they were booked in under the old system, and pace came in between that time, and then I suddenly became a custody officer, having to abide by all these new rules. It was a dramatic change, absolutely dramatic change. And that's what's in now. It's still in now. Whether it's going to get changed again, I don't know.
And I suppose the other thing is that the police themselves came under more scrutiny in certain high-profile cases.
Oh, very much so. I mean, it was accountability that came in the latter part of our services where money came into play, one would assume, and they were then deemed to be a business and a financially secure one, whereas previous to that, money really wasn't ever mentioned. Any major issue that came up, or tragedy, or major incidents, they were dealt with. Money didn't seem to come in with a view to, well, we can only do that for so many months or so many days. You did it to the end. We did our own prosecutions in those days because, I mean, even when we first joined, we had the Plymouth Women's Police Section. So the women would go to their own sex incidents, and we'd go to male incidents. And certainly on the sexual side, women would only ever go to the women's side, and they'd always say, do you want a woman there? And you would have then a woman sent, whereas now it's one role. You know, the women go to the same job as the men, whereas we'd always back up the women. We'd always be told, well, don't worry, WPC Smith would go to wherever. But you'd just close in on the scene, so you'd be on the peripherals if anything did happen. Because the fact then she was a woman, whereas now, that, well, I won't say they're as good, because that's not the right word, but we all do the same job now, and that's the big difference. And technology's made a huge difference.
Would you like to be police officers now?
No.
No?
No. No.
Why not?
I think it's just that change. There's too many changes. There's the accountability. I don't know. I've been retired 13 years. I don't know anyone that would that's in my sort of era that's since retired would actually say I'd do it all over again. I don't know. No, there's not many people that would say yes, they would.
And you feel the same,
in my opinion.
I certainly feel the same, but it's very much like if you have a house in one location of the country and it's a lovely area and you're forced to leave. The one thing you don't do and you should never do is go back to the same house, because you can't rebuild from what you had. And I think it's the fact that we were police officers in those days where society was completely different.
Yeah.
Whereas now, as we've said, the accountability came in. I'm not saying we weren't accountable in the old days, because we were, probably more so. But it was a job for life then. You retired after 30 years at the age of 49 with a pension. The pension and the shift system's all been eroded, and they're not comparable. And I don't think we can compare the two. We enjoyed our time in then, those days, whereas now, I just remembered the good days.
Well, let's talk about the book, because the book does focus on what were the good days for you. And both of you wrote it. How does that work, two people writing a novel?
Quite George. Easy, really.
Did you? I mean, yeah. On a practical level, how do you?
On a practical level, I did most of the writing. So if there was an expert out there who read the book, I think they might be able to identify which parts were Andrew and which parts were me. But in the main, we agreed that I would do all the writing, or most of the writing, and then Andrew would check it. We did like a chapter or two chapters at a time. We started off by saying we needed to do, we did a lot of research. We were in a class of 14, so we decided that we would try and get to see all those 14, and most of them, all but one, were obliging, and we saw, or at least spoke to them over the phone to just get their views. So a lot of the stories we got from the horse's mouth, so as to speak.
And it's a lovely looking book. How does it feel to see your names on a novel?
Amazing. Absolutely good. Amazing. Yeah.
Something
yeah.
I never imagined.
But that was one of the reasons. I made this decision because I wanted to leave a legacy. I wanted to leave a legacy for my children and my children's children and those beyond, to say my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather's written a book. And that was the main objective. But then what else came into play is that, having spoken to other cadets, is no one else has written a book like this, that we can find anyway. Certainly not in relation to Hertfordshire. And we wanted to sort of like pay homage to those that trained us, because that couldn't have been an easy task to train hundreds of cadets, you know, all different levels of people, some good, some bad, you know, that the trainers themselves were amazing, absolutely amazing. And that's
so what next for you then? Because I'm guessing that, you know, Ed and Harry could have further adventures, sequels.
They certainly did. They certainly did have
further
adventures.
Sure they did. I can tell by your faces they did.
I think we'd have to wait and see how this comes out first before we decide to. I have penned certain things. I have made notes about certain events. Whether people want to listen, people want to read, we don't know. But it would be, they are there, and they could come out. But we'll have to wait and see.
Well, lovely. Thank you very much for offering this up as a prize to our listeners.
It's our pleasure.
I'll give the competition question in just a moment. But the book is called Hard Yet. It's written by Andrew Brasher and George Smith. It's published by Vanguard Press, which is an imprint of Pegasus Elliott Mackenzie Publishers Limited. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lee.
I know you're just at the beginning, really, of doing publicity for this. But good luck with it. Let us know how it goes. And if you write a sequel, stay in touch and come back and tell us about
Superb.
That.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.